This is the Beat Your Genes podcast, and my name is Nate G. I created this podcast to bridge together the science of evolutionary psychology and the clinical experience of Dr. Doug Lyle, all so that we can discover what life is all about. In each episode, Dr. Lyle analyzes and explains the psychology behind real-life situations from our listeners on topics like romance, friendship, work, family, health, and many more. We broadcast live every Wednesday at 8:30 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, which means you can call us during the show and ask Dr. Lyle a question. The U.S. number is 657-383-0751, or send in your question through the website www.beatyourgenes.org. Good evening, everyone. Nate here with Dr. Lyle with the Beat Your Genes podcast. So Dr. Lyle and I are here every week to talk about evolutionary psychology and how it applies to life, love, sex, dating, friends, relationships, and finding our own happiness. So you can call in and speak with us about whatever's on your mind, ask us some questions, or if you're brave enough, tell us an embarrassing story or two about yourself. Well, this week on our podcast, a longtime listener has an honor session with Dr. Lyle about finding his own identity and what to consider when making his life decisions. So we're all on this earth for the same biological reasons, and that is to spread our genes. But if we're diligent enough, alert enough, and even a little lucky enough, we might just experience a whole heck of a lot of happiness along the way.
Dr. Lyle, good.
Very good, very good. All right, so tell me a story about what's going on. What are we working on? What are we trying to get better?
Overall just better understanding of myself and being more comfortable with who that self is. But I think the hardest part is kind of knowing who I am,
mm-hmm.
and finding that, you know, that honest voice about that, and then being comfortable with some of those things because,
mm-hmm.
you know, I don't know if you remember maybe like the email and like the call that we had, but a lot of my confusion or issues kind of stems from the values of my parents that have been pushed on me that are mm-hmm. not aligned with who I am, really, mm-hmm. like deep down, and also in many ways the nature of me being a male,
mm-hmm.
and so kind of trying to find that voice again, and I guess making sure that that's really me, rather than maybe what I may think I might want. Also, you know what I mean, and trying to find that all that out is kind of my long-term goal, and I was hoping, and, you know, listening to, like, Beat Your Genes and this other podcast that Dr. Jeffrey Miller was part of for a while,
mm-hmm.
with Tucker Max, I forget what it's called, Mating Grounds podcast or something, is when I mm-hmm. first was introduced to evolutionary biology, and so it definitely struck a chord, and so, like, for me, I've, and especially with your podcast and more, like, how you focus on things like esteem has been more day-to-day applicable for sure, because Mating Grounds is more focused on relationships and things like that, closer to like 90% of the time, which is really
mm-hmm.
informational. But, you know, for me as an individual and my own personal growth, that's kind of where, you know, I find yours to be more applicable, your focus,
mm-hmm.
And your podcast, your Nate's podcast. But in general, that's kind of what I'm hoping for and kind of in the process of doing and I guess on the path of trying to get to.
Yeah. So, all right. So try to articulate this for me a little again. So, where is your life experience? You know, where are you frustrated a little bit or puzzled or, you know, any kind of confusion or, unhappy about something? Give me a little feel for anything that you're struggling with that you're trying to improve.
Sure. You know, I think on a day-to-day basis, it's definitely decreased in terms of, you know, like self-consciousness and confidence has improved immensely, just in kind of thinking a lot about the things that you guys talk about. But I think like the things that I struggle with, probably mostly around family, and I think the big struggle is actually, should I just go after what I totally want, even though it may not be the most sound. So I have a daughter, so like you know, like in the email where I asked about, you know, me being Korean and kind of always struggling with the desire to be successful and live according to what my parents want, which is pretty much be a doctor, be married, but ultimately be very boring.
Right.
That's kind of what I've always fought against.
Right.
Because I don't know if it's definitely partly because of my personality. I'm very outgoing. I'm very fun-loving. I enjoy I'm very open experiences, and challenging myself and just doing something new and bizarre just because it's new and bizarre sometimes. But like, that's kind of where, that's who I guess if you left me to my own devices, that's, I'd be dead. And that's probably something along those lines wouldn't been what caused it, you know? And so, you know, it's like, that's, Maybe that's who I am, though. You know, I don't know a lot of it. If it was a lot of like rebellion and kind of like as you described about kicking the table over and just saying forget it, I'm not going to do anything that that falls in line with what you want because it's just at a set at a higher level than what I think I can attain. And that definitely played a part, just kind of overall. But you know, in general, I just struggle to not want to just kind of be like basically be like a surf beach bum. I guess that's the easiest stereotype to kind of call on to explain. Like that's my daily story. Not daily, but that's what I've tried to for so long, look for a way that I can have a lot of resources and yet be able to just not care about stuff and have fun and have a good life. And you know, I sit there and I argue to myself, I'm like, well, you know, if you're dirt poor, life would still suck. And you know, there's a lot of that battle about like what's the best path forward. And I've done pretty well to a point where I'm in a good place now. It took a while, but you know, I tried the don't do much with your life route for a while, and I ended up kind of always still wanting to make a lot of money. And so I guess there's that struggle too. It's like this nature of biologically of, you know, wanting to have resources because, you know, females are attracted to that and all sorts of stuff along those lines. And, you know, listening to Beat Your Genes has really helped, and evolutionary biology in general has kind of helped to not make me feel guilty about it because, strangely enough, although my parents wanted me to get resources, they would also kind of guilt me into not wanting money because that's like Korean plus Christianity.
Right.
Is the messed up thing about that. But, you know, and so somehow that confused the hell out of me.
Yes.
But, yeah, I mean, in general, I think that whatever were all the different influences to kind of, like, screw up that part of me, I think I'm still struggling with that question of, like, whether or not I really want to just kind of always keep working so damn hard for money. Money
Got
is
it.
Nice. And that's
right.
A really big struggle, man.
Right. Now, let's just look at a few issues here because these are interesting. How old are you?
I'm 35.
35. Okay. And what kind of work do you do now?
I am a software developer for iPhone apps, so mobile software developer, iOS developer.
Got it. Okay. So you're a software developer. So you make a pretty good living?
Yeah. Finally.
Okay.
Yeah, it took me a while to get there, but.
Got it. Make a pretty good living. And so are you married with this daughter, or what's your situation?
I was married, just close to the end of the process of divorce.
Okay. So divorcing now, but your daughter is, how old is your daughter?
4.
4 years old, okay. And
yeah.
So we got a situation where you're sort of going to wind up sharing custody effectively?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. So, and is it all reasonably amicable, or are we in a big mess?
Yeah, you know, it's a little hard to explain, but
yeah,
generally it's reasonably amicable except that she doesn't want me to really have that much time with my daughter. The only reason it's amicable
yeah,
is because
right.
she's super passive aggressive, and I won't let her make me get upset emotionally. So I guess we
mm-hmm.
are both adults to some degree.
Mm-hmm.
But deep down inside, you know, like, I really don't like what she's doing, and she clearly doesn't
yeah.
like certain things about me, and that's why she's doing what she's doing.
Got it. Okay. So this is sounds like this is this is what I call fair enough. In other words, the
yeah.
human beings were not designed to be getting married at 30 years old or 23 years old and then be happily monogamous for 50 years. That is not
yeah.
the nature of the species. And
mm-hmm.
so the fact that a few people can actually pull it off truly successfully is an interesting possibility. It's just
mm-hmm.
simply not typical. Okay, so
yeah.
we wouldn't expect that to be true. And so we would expect an awful lot of people, by virtue of a religious pressure, social pressure of various kinds, i.e. religious pressure, social pressure, other kinds of social pressure, as well as financial pressures, to stick with relationships that are no longer very satisfying
mm-hmm.
in order to honor expectations or honor legitimate problematic responsibilities with respect to children, et cetera. But
yeah.
you're in a situation where you're in the early 21st century. You're smart. You're a software developer. You make a decent living. Your soon-to-be ex is not a crazy nutcase that you have to spend all of your resources trying to pry the daughter away from her so that the daughter can have a decent existence.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, you've got a situation that is reasonably amicable. It's good enough, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
In fact, it sounds like the ex is probably highly conscientious and thinks that the daughter's better off with her than it is with you. And so, therefore, you know, she feels morally justified in trying to put up barriers to that or whatever. You know, that's
yeah.
that's standard operating procedure, particularly for moms. Remember, in principle, she has a far greater genetic investment in this child than you do. In other words, more of her genetic energies are willing to pour into it than yours will be. And therefore, she feels extra protective of that, you know, she needs to have her eyeballs on this person's developmental struggles more than you. So
yeah.
all reasonable, completely fine. The courts will never get this figured out because they can't look through an evolutionary lens. But that's all, you know, the courts will never be able to bring evolutionary biology into these questions. But if we did, it halfway would look like courts looked in the 1970s and 80s. In other words,
right.
lean it towards the mother, but the dad should be in there if he wants to be in there and he's paying. So
right.
fair enough, okay? So that's fine. So now you are going to be free. How long have you been – were you attached to this lady?
So, you know, at the time that I had decided to split up and wanted a divorce, we had been together total 8 years, 2 years dating, 6 years married. But the
okay.
divorce process is now approaching 2.5 years since I moved out.
Yeah. So this has sort of been a 10-year process, more or less.
Right.
So mid-20s to mid-30s, your life's been about this girl and then this child. And you know what I mean? So you did the big thing.
Mm-hmm.
You did what you were, quote, supposed to do, get
exactly,
married,
yeah.
have a kid, et cetera. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
And you're finding that it was sort of on a 1 to 10 scale, whatever the experience was, you smelled that you could probably engineer a better experience. the one that you were having. So you ran the cost benefit and you said, you know what, this isn't the road that this is going to go. So fair enough. So we're on a new road, and and that's fine. And now, as you say, you're sort of trying to find yourself. So let's talk about, to some extent, what it is that that means, just sort of for your own entertainment. The you wouldn't know this until you taste a cherry, whether or not you like cherries.
Mm-hmm.
And you won't know until you taste a peach whether you like peaches. And
right.
That means that what you have essentially is you have an identity. And that identity is the characteristics about what make you you. And that identity is going to have, or you know, who it is that you are, that essentially is a whole set of conditional relations between you and your environment. So you like oceans, you don't like desert. You like desert, you don't like oceans. You know what I mean? You like women that are curvy, you like women that are thin. You like women with big lips, or you don't like them with big lips. You like them with big eyebrows. Or you like short hair, or no, you like long hair. You like them tall, you don't like them tall, etc. Okay? You like soccer better than you like basketball. These are all your identity. You like to read nonfiction instead of fiction, or you like to read Victor Hugo. Okay, so all of these different things I could never know about you, okay? But if you told me and made an exhaustive list, it might be fascinating to know about you. But ultimately, you know, I can't use that information for very much unless we're in a relationship and I give you a gift for Christmas and I'm trying to give you something that I think that you would really like, okay? So the bottom line is the person that is in by far the best position to try to figure out their own identity is the person themselves. And in order to do that, that person has to go have experiences, and they've got to watch their own reactions and try to essentially run correlation coefficients on situations and try to figure out just how valuable they find those situations. So, for example, I found out pretty early I couldn't care less about going to parties. Okay, parties was not a place that was going to work for me. Okay, those have been out, and so now I'm in my late 50s, and nothing about that's going to change. I don't like soccer. Soccer frustrates the hell out of me to watch it because I want to pick up the damn thing and throw it. Okay, it just doesn't make any sense to me to have a game where you don't use your hands or only one guy uses his hands. So I don't care if they call it the beautiful game. I can see elements of basketball, you know, in there that are interesting to me. I see the movements, et cetera. Water polo also frustrates me. That also looks a lot like basketball, but I can't believe how slow those guys have to move. So this all messes with my head. Okay.
Yeah.
So our identity is what color a carpet do you want to have in your living room? You know, do you want to be downtown in an area where there's a lot of little shops and restaurants, or do you want to be in the suburbs where it's quiet or overlooking a golf course? This is your identity. And so our job in life is to figure that thing out. And the more savvy we are at figuring out that identity, the better chances we have of using our time and energy to put ourselves in circumstances that activate the moods of happiness. Okay? So one of the problems is that one of the most important things that activates the moods of happiness is going to be esteem signals from other people. And so one of the reasons this is a problem is that some people will only give us esteem signals under conditions that are inconsistent with our identity.
What does that mean exactly?
Okay. In other words, let's suppose that I've got a girlfriend. She's a sweet girl. I'm a nice guy, but she really likes guys that are tough and that can stick up and don't take any guff and push back to other guys. But that's not me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I can't win her esteem, and there's going to be a problem when we run into a conflict and I don't behave in that way, and now she's going to be disappointed and unhappy. Oh well. Find yourself a brute, okay? Because that's not in my identity. We're not the right people. And so it's going to turn out that a job in this life isn't just to find out whether you like sunsets over the water or over the desert. It's also to try to figure out what people are that you can interact with, that you can earn their esteem, but it's in a way that's consistent with your identity. Okay? So if I was with somebody that just couldn't understand why it is that I wasn't all excited about trading stocks and day trading, trying to maximize my rate of return on my investments and, you know, this portfolio and that portfolio, and then et cetera, it's like I couldn't care less.
Mm-hmm.
I want to spend less than 30 minutes a year thinking about that kind of stuff. Okay, so but somebody else, they obsess about it 8 hours a day. Different organism. Different priorities.
I see what you're saying.
So your job in this life, you're 35. You know yourself pretty well. Pretty well. You're on an odyssey now. You're adventurous enough to, you know, stick your toe in a lot of different water to try to figure this out. That's good. But one of the things that, you know, one of the lessons here when we sort of talk of this way about learning about myself and what I ought to be doing, it's, I'll tell you what it is. Take your happiness seriously. It's like,
mm-hmm.
I really need to figure out what makes me happy and to try to close our eyes and focus on that and try to figure out what kinds of circumstances does it really make me happy, as opposed to as much as possible divorced or separated from the expectations of other people. And the problem is it's hard to do that completely because sometimes those things are interacting with other people. I don't want to go to a movie about horses if some girl I'm with hates movies about horses, and then I want to go with her, but then she's going to not want to be there. Now it's a mess. Okay? So what we want to do in general is our relationships with other people, we want to construct them in such a way that our interactions or our intersection of those two lives is as rich as possible in low conflict, that we do things mm-hmm. together that we like to do together, but we don't do things together that we don't like doing together.
Right.
So
right.
I will see husbands and wives make this mistake all the time. Okay. One of the biggest mistakes they make is to work together, for God's sakes. Not generally a good idea. Okay. So I'm not saying it can't work. I'm just saying it's a lousy probability that it's going to work.
Right.
So now as we talk about this, what sorts of questions or decisions are floating around in your head for your future, or how it is that you, what changes are you contemplating, you know, obviously beyond this divorce, et cetera?
Kind of everything goes back into exactly that. And I think you said it best about what really makes me happy. And I think for a long time, whether or not it was really me and what it made me really happy, I pursued what I thought was making me happy. And in that, mm-hmm. like right after college, I wasn't planning on working and I really didn't. But then I had the accident, and so I was forced to kind of deviate plans, but I still didn't get a job right away because that wouldn't have made me happy. So, and my, you know, as pushy as my parents were about their traditional East Asian expectations, they were still pretty cool to let me not work, kind of give me time to ease into things and figure mm-hmm. things out. Mm-hmm. And, but you know, like it was kind of always in the back of my head, even though I was like, let's say traveling around or something. Mm-hmm. But you know, it's kind of, for me now, so like, you know, all that was in the back of my head. So I kind of half-assed in a way did what, I really wanted to do, which was not have to go into like, the white collar workforce after college. Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. at the same time, then I met my ex-wife and, then while I was traveling, and then I moved back to start making some money and then be able to visit her. So we got married. And also the decision to get married was kind of like, nobody pushed me at all, but it was kind of like mm-hmm. that society pressure that you just
yeah,
kind
you
of
felt
feel.
It.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
sure.
so, I think for me now with a daughter, I'm not looking to go be a surf beach bum, but you know, it's always
right.
that battle of wanting to just kind of be happy. And that, you know, ideally that is a lot of things that are not really practical having a kid, especially, but in general,
yeah.
Otherwise, you know, you can, it just depends on what kind of lifestyle you want to lead. And I think that I've gotten comfortable with like a certain socioeconomic level. So
mm-hmm.
it's hard for me to totally kick that, you know, and I didn't have to when I wasn't really working after college. And that was, you know, in a way that's a fault of my parents for allowing that to continue and me living in this false reality. But, you know, I think that generally the hardest part for me now is kind of like thinking about the ideal woman slash, you know, kind of what kind of people I want to be with, what kind of person I would want to be with. And also whether or not I really want a partner, like a single partner long-term. Obviously it's a lot of just kind of thought right now because I haven't really entered the dating scene, but I have
mm-hmm.
spent time kind of like the one-off person that I'm talking to and just bringing up. I have gone on a couple dates, but not like
mm-hmm.
in terms of like app dating or anything.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess that's kind of where I'm struggling with is I'm turning that page in terms of dating. Like, I don't want to give anyone the wrong idea of what I want. I feel like
mm-hmm.
I think I know what I want, but it's very not in line with society, especially in the Chicago area.
Mm-hmm.
It's very conservative. So it's kind of like I still feel that pressure of where I'm at,
mm-hmm.
I mean, where I'm living, of what people are expecting is acceptable versus
it's
what
extraordinary.
I think I want. In terms
extraordinary.
Of like type
let's
of
talk about this.
Or type of girl. Yeah.
Yeah, let's look at this.
Okay.
This is the book I would recommend for you is called How I Found Freedom in an Unfree World. And it's one of the most
–
what's that?
I think I heard on a podcast you recommended that before.
Yes. This is an outstanding book, and it's right down the lines of the kind of thinking that you need to be exposed to in detail. Author is Harry
okay.
Brown, who's just a fabulous character. He wrote this in 1973, and it's one of the finest self-help books that I've – it is probably the finest self-help book that I've ever read. The
mm-hmm.
And so this is my attitude in the world is this. You've sort of got one job, and the one job is an adult animal needs to earn its own living. So you need to earn your living, and in the case of a father, you need to provision your offspring reasonably.
Mm-hmm.
You do not need to fall on your sword for your offspring. You do not need to make sure there's money to send her to Harvard or Penn, okay? You don't
mm-hmm.
need to send her to private school. Nothing needs to be fancy. Everything needs to be safe and decent, okay? That's what a kid legitimately should have if you have the chops to provide that, okay? After
mm-hmm.
that, your time in your life is your own. Who you sleep with, who you pursue, what you do for a living, where you go on vacation, and, you know, who you hang with. Boy, you talk about not anybody else's business. You got exactly one life to live, and you've got maybe 10,000 days or so, a few more or less, to live it.
Mm-hmm.
And you've already lived half of it, basically.
Yeah.
Like, whoa. Okay, so now the issue is, and you don't, for all we know, you've lived 70% of it.
Yeah.
So the attitude here is make your life an adventure and seek fun, excitement, joy, sexuality, friendship, laughter, etc. Yeah, and if you can tell whether or not you're doing a good job, whether or not you feel good. The feeling good and feeling happy and excited about living is an absolute natural characteristic of the organism that spontaneously emerges when we're actually making good use of our assets and circumstances are relatively benign. You
mm-hmm.
have very much benign circumstances. And so the question is, are you making good use of your time and energy? And if it turns out that you're sort of not very happy, then it's probably the case that some of your decisions are pushing you into situations we're not really in situations that are probably as good as they could be with respect to your identity. So there is more happiness chips that could be activated in your head more often than are, you know, in other words, they sit there. It's like a jukebox. And the question is, can you hit the, you know, can you hit K2 and hear like a Rolling Stone that you want to really hear? And so your nervous system is a jukebox, and your job is to move around this world and find the people and the situations that will hit the jukebox in a way that the system fires off the internal music that's very pleasant. Okay? That's what we're up to. And so if that's happening sort of so-so, that's fine. That means it's not terrible. But it also means that we're sniffing, that that we are not optimizing those decisions. And that's fine. That's good. That's what we're here to do, and we're here to learn more about that. And we're here to try to sharpen our acuity when it comes to making those decisions. You know, at the end of this life, you want to have the scorecard, you know, show your runs and your hits and your errors, the times that you hit home runs and the time you struck out. But we don't want to show that we didn't play, okay? We didn't want to be intimidated by anybody into not rolling up our shirt sleeves and engaging in the process, win or lose, whatever the process is at the time. So I don't know what girls you find exciting and what about those girls that you find exciting that somebody else might wrinkle up their nose. But my attitude is, hey, pursue where the excitement leads you and just make sure you don't get BD or get people pregnant or get shot. And other than that, it's all an open season. And when it comes to pair bonding and, quote, what you're looking for in a partner, my attitude is that you will discover whether or not somebody is a partner. You will not decide. There's a difference, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So when people are trying to decide whether or not this is a good person, trust me, it's not the right person, okay? You discover whether they are the right person, and when you discover it, it's obvious, and you wouldn't want to be hanging with anybody else. Then there is no decision-making process. The right brain takes over a situation that says this is obviously the right place for you to be. You are in very pleasant circumstances very often, and this is a very cool person to hang with. You wouldn't really want to be talking and hanging out with anybody else. That doesn't mean that we don't have a casual mating chip that wouldn't want to be hitting some chippy on the side, but that doesn't mean we do it. And it doesn't mean that we are going to be unhappy if we don't do it. It means that we recognize that there are trade-offs and conflicts of interest at times, and sometimes we can't have every impulse we want if we're going to get 80% of the impulses that we do want. So, yeah, the How I Found Freedom in an Unfree World, I think, is very apropos to some of the things you're talking about, Dan, and probably to a lot of people that will listen to this. And I feel like, you know, you're sort of getting your eyes a little more open with every year that passes here. And you know, at 25 they weren't very wide open. They were under a lot of other social pressure that were, you know, twisting you around, a lot of expectations, weren't really sure how to live this thing. And by 35 you're just cussed enough and open and adventurous enough, and your parents aren't so oppressive and you're not intimidated enough that you're like, you know what, I'm not going to quite walk the road that everybody would want, but you're still learning about your own identity. And my attitude would be, learn away, just don't die in the process, you know.
Yeah.
You want to know how this jukebox is built. Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, so I mean, you know, listening to you talk about all that stuff, and specifically in the idea of relationships, has kind of helped me to kind of understand that I think a lot of the maybe confusion, as I talked about earlier, just in general, in terms of what I want to do with my life type stuff, all still comes back to I'm not fully – it kind of goes back to this question. This is the question that came up was, how is it – It's hard to always pursue what's going to make me happy if it's going to make somebody else that is still important in my life unhappy. i.e. my parents, for example. Just whether that's
okay.
relationships, and that's more evident in the type of girl I choose, for example, for my my next, you know, long-term relationship, or job-wise, life decisions. That's kind of what I've always struggled with, and I think that I bowed to a lot of it when I was younger, less now, but, you know, they're still pretty, especially my mom, she can be pretty vocal sometimes, you know. You know, for a long time, I kind of was just took the attitude of, F this, I don't care what they say, but, you know, I was saying that more than actually doing it. In some ways, I was doing things along that motto, you know, line, but not completely evidenced by the fact that I got married before I really wanted to and stuff like that. So,
right.
That's kind of my, that's what the hardest part about it is being happy with what I really want to do, whether it's something as benign as like, do I want to get a tattoo? Then my family would freak out, you know, like versus, but I do want one, you know, I want two, but you know, I've just never made those decisions. And that's the real struggle.
Right. Right. No, I understand. And so the, certainly we are a very curious animal. I don't think that there's another animal on earth that in the prime of its life gives a rat's ass what its parents think. Okay, so this is a bizarre species in a number of ways. And by the same token, I don't know of another species that an aging parent could give a damn about what the adult son or daughter is up to. That both directions, this is bizarre.
Mm.
And so this is a derivative of an extraordinarily large mind that has a very, very long view of the genes, to the point where the parents are computing what they believe their offspring's mate value is and what they should be attaining on the other side of the equation, and they're determined to try to get the better end of a deal when it comes to grandchildren. I mean, I have to tell you, that's what's going on. Like, you know what, my son's 6% better than that female, and therefore he shouldn't be marrying her, because now the offspring, we're going to take a 3% hit in the gene quality, and that's a disaster. I mean, that... essentially, the algorithms are in there to do that kind of math, obviously, or they wouldn't be looking over our shoulder from their 60th birthday, peering into our life, wondering about what we're up to.
So what you're saying is the bigger brain just makes humans bigger control freaks. That's basically what it
is. Yes. There's no doubt that that's exactly what's going on. And there's an upside to that, which is that, for one thing, they could be successful in their judgment. In other words, their longer life enables them to learn some things and also to get political power and to push and shove and try to, like, get us into potentially genetically advantageous circumstances. That's one thing. But the problem is that it's not that simple. That parents' agendas wind up being really complicated, and we don't even know the whole evolution of parental agendas. But for example, like just to show you how non-benign parental agendas can be, and that is that you can imagine some 50-year-old father with a 25-year-old son, and he is pushing and shoving his son to accomplish certain things, driving him, you know, off the cliff in order to accomplish certain things to optimize his potential in some competitive arena that it looks cool. So that the father looks like he sired this thing, so therefore the father can get laid by attractive females who want to replicate with him so that their offspring might be as successful as his son.
Yeah.
Okay?
That makes total sense.
So, yeah. Don't think that kind of stuff didn't go through Tiger Woods' dad. I think Tiger Woods' dad actually probably didn't push that kid that much, from what I understand. That kid was just inherently driven. But don't think he didn't get laid because he wasn't Tiger Woods' dad.
I make sure my daughter looks good when I go out in public in case there's a hot girl that wants to come talk to me. You think I'm joking on that?
No, I don't. I don't think you're joking at all. Yeah, exactly. So the point is that parental agendas, they always feel to the parents like they are completely uninterested personally, and just completely, essentially, quote, altruistically motivated to help you make the right decision. But the truth of the matter is your genetic success and their genetic success are actually not exactly the same. They are fairly parallel, but they are not exactly the same. And so, and then, of course, beyond that, there's variation in brains and judgment and, you know, all these kinds of things, i.e. identities. And so your parents, in general, would rather have you be with, quote, the right girl that makes them look good. In other words, they've got independent of how this would tie into the genes in this particular context in history. In a broader context in history, as the parent of offspring, you would want your son to marry the highest potentially status female so that so that his siblings and his political connections and his offspring would all benefit from the highest potential status, you see? So from their perspective, they might be thinking, and they have different circuits analyzing this problem where you're saying, yeah, but she's an 8, but the other one's a 9, okay? And so they can see that, but they don't quite have your same aesthetic judgment. And from their perspective, no, you're better off, you know, marrying the 8, you know, because the 8 is better connected, went to Harvard, you know, conscientious as hell, and therefore this is good, solid stuff, and it makes your sister's kids look good, it makes your brother's kids look good, it makes us look good. That's who you should be marrying. And the answer is, yeah, but she's not a fox. I've got a fox over there, and I'm a hell of a lot more interested in the fox. And they're pulling their hair out, okay? And they're really pissed off. And why are they pissed off? Because you're crossing their agenda, okay? So what I'm pointing out here is not that I'm pissed at the parents. What I'm saying is that human mating decisions, unlike any other species, have multi-generational conflicts of interest within families, okay? Now, it is so. It is truth, okay? And some families are going to be more egregious about voicing this than others. It depends upon how agreeable or disagreeable the parents are. If your mom's pushy about this and it's a pain in the neck, you know what I mean? This is a thorn in your side. And so I would say that as we get better insight into this, we have to back up and laugh. You know, it's like, listen, I hope you like whoever I'm hanging out with, but you know, your identity is your identity. And those mating decisions are really meant to be made essentially independent of their input. You know, not that you want. Yeah, go ahead.
That it kind of risks, you know, in one extreme. I don't think that at this point that would happen to me. But like, for example, when I was in high school, I got kicked out of my house, not because of mating decisions, but of other decisions that essentially crossed my parents' agenda. So like, you know, to some degree, there's like a risk of, let's say, some form of loneliness, being ostracized and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's the hardest part of making that full kind of, I guess I'm going to use a word here, but it's not fully in context applicable. That's such a selfish decision, right? Focusing on what makes me happy. And that's the hardest part for me.
Right.
As a kind of, because of empathy and whatnot. But.
Yeah, right. You know what, we can, I would say this, we can finesse the fact that there are conflicts of interest between us and people close to us. And quite frankly, a big part of beating the genes is to find ways to have it so that we can do this peacefully, but these people got to choke it down. Okay. We have to honor our identity. And honoring our identity means we're going to minimize their input in our decision making, and so this is I think we'll close this discussion with me once again giving my very highest recommendation to How I Found Freedom in an Unfree World. The whole concept of selfishness is really well addressed there. It's the notion is you ought to be selfish. What the hell else are we doing here? Okay, and we can be selfish but very civil. You know, we can be firm, but we can be warm about it. We don't need to be. You know, I can understand why young people get belligerent and why they have real life breaks with their parents, because sometimes The parents just cannot stop themselves. The genes are running their show, and they can't stop themselves from trying to interfere and meddle and essentially push that kid's identity into some arena that they're so sure is going to be best for, quote, the son or daughter, but in fact, what it's best for their personal genes. Done from
your
own perspective.
Yeah, you're talking about my parents right there.
There you go. Okay? So forget it. I don't know if you want to be a software engineer, a doctor, or I don't know whether you want to be a concert promoter. You know what I'm saying? Who knows? I don't know what it is. But you should be following your nose of excitement and interest. And that doesn't mean that money is independent of that. Money is resources, and resources are what animals try to get. So you know, people like a job on all things being equal. We like a job that pays $100,000 more than we like a job that pays $80,000. And so that's part of the equipment that we try to figure this out. But you're going to live a long time, and I wouldn't, if you've got the options and the brains and the capability to make some sacrifices to invest in a financial future, then the idea would be do something that you really that you like, and rather you know that pays reasonably well, and don't worry about trying to make the last nickel on the table as if that's going to leverage into a lot of happiness, because it won't. It won't. It certainly pays to be scheming to try to figure out how you're going to do what you want to do and make more money at it. That's fine. But don't be starting out this life or rigging this life towards trying to figure out how I can turn my IQ points into money. You know, that's how that's how you get a lot of miserable MDs. And believe me, I met a slew of them. Okay. Where was all the happiness that was supposed to come at the end of this? And the answer is, for a whole hell of a lot of them, it's not there. Okay, so do things that you find enjoyable and interesting. Do them well. Try to rise in the world there. And other than that, you know, have the carpet that you want and be trying to get with the girl that you want to be with. And the parents are just going to have to choke it down. And we can be nice about it, but they got to choke it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Awesome. Yeah. I already bought that book on Kindle, so I'm going to be reading it probably tonight. So.
Very good.
I mean, that sounds
great.
That sounds
very
good
call, Dan. Thanks for calling.
Thanks for listening. If you like what you hear, subscribe, write us a review, or share this podcast with a friend. To send in a question or read more about the show, you can visit our website at www.beatyourgenes.org. Until next time, this is Nate G and Dr. Lyle with Beat Your Genes, an evolutionary psychology podcast for finding happiness in the modern world.